Broadcasting live from Studio 1A in Brooklyn, New York. This is Empire State Reptiles Live, specializing in connecting breeders and fans worldwide. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Good evening or good afternoon for some. Welcome to another episode of Empire State Reptiles Live. My name is Chris, and as usual, I'm your host for tonight's show. It has definitely been a while, we could say so ourselves, but you also have to remember that we are in the climax of summer, which means there is a lot of traveling going on my part, as well as our special guest part, yada, yada, yada. So it can be difficult to plan around those events. However, as summer slowly comes to an end, we promise you that we will get right back on track and become more consistent with the times that we broadcast, which is normally Saturday nights at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, like we are doing tonight. So, as I normally come on air and apologize for my absentee, let's get right into the show tonight. Tonight, we will be talking to yet another food alternative for your animals. We're going to be taking a look at Reptilinx. And as the name states, it is links filled with meaty and fruity goodness for your cold-blooded friends. Some may be skeptical, however, tons love this product, so let us get into the show and explore the endless possibilities of Reptilinx. Here to discuss this product tonight, we have Nick Hebley, owner and the founder of Reptilinx. So let's jump right in and see what he's all about. Good evening, Nick. How are you doing?
Good. How are you doing, Chris? Thanks for having me on. Appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you for coming on. So let's jump right into it like I normally love to do. Explain to us your background. So you're not only the food manufacturer, but you're also a fellow reptile owner and reptile breeder.
Reptilinx, it's a family-owned company. We are reptile people that make reptile food, which is... You know, we find that as an important important aspect of what we do, because all of our products that we make are literally through years of, you know, trial and error, and for, you know, essentially all testing that we've done are done on our own animals. So, you know, right in house. So that's a pretty cool aspect of what we do. Just to give a little quick background, I know we don't have a ton of time here, about 45 minutes or so, so I'll try to just cut to the chase as much as I can.
Of course.
Reptiles, they're in my blood, and they always have been. Since the age of four, it's actually a cool little story. The neighborhood that I lived in, my parents, actually my dad, would take me to this area that was nothing more than what was supposed to be an adjoining neighborhood, but they lost funding or something on it. So they excavated all this soil and you know, prep to do these new developments. But I don't know if they lost funding or whatever it was. But they didn't go through with building this, you know, these developments, these residential homes. What happened was they dug out a bunch of gravel pits, and, of course, the rains came. I grew up in Michigan, which has a huge population of herps, a lot of snakes, a lot of amphibians, and it essentially became a breeding ground for many different species of frogs. And, of course, where there's frogs, there's many different species of snakes as well. We actually ended up dubbing this place. We called it Frogs Island, and I actually still have the original shirt my parents had made for me. It said, "I heart Frogs Island." And essentially, I would beg my father to take me there every evening so I could catch frogs and learn more about them. So from a very early age, I was all for, you know, some of the slimy critters. And that's essentially where it started. From there, Prue's Pets, where I grew up, they're one of the biggest pet stores in the United States. And I watched them grow from a little hole in the wall all the way up to, you know, what they've created now, which is pretty amazing. And so I originally started breeding fish when I was very young. And I did a lot of tropical species. I loved predatory fish as well. Piranha, wolffish were my favorite. And so I would breed these animals, and I learned how to sell them back to the pet store. And I think my family literally helped fund that pet store because my brothers, I have two brothers, they were into it as much as I was at the time, and we literally had every kind of reptile you could imagine growing up. And so that was pretty neat. It was kind of something that started very early on. As things progressed and I started keeping reptiles and learning more about them, the other thing, too, back then, you didn't really have the internet. It was available, but the databases weren't there. So there was just not a lot of good information. Even before that, I can remember, you know, you had a dial-up server or something like that. So any information that you could acquire would be through other people that you met or if you were lucky enough to find a book. And I remember growing up, literally, if I found a book with pertinent information on it, breeding a species or whatever it may be, I mean, the back of the binder would be broken out of that thing because I would read it so many times. I specialize much more in the larger boids, the berms, the retics, a lot of the BCC, and that's really where my heart still lies, although I'm huge into carpet pythons as well. So it's really just been a lifelong passion. I was able to share it with my brothers as well. My brother Tyler Hebley is co-owner and does a lot of work. He's a PhD scientist, and he contributes a lot to the business as well.
Wow. So we love to hear about stories like this, a family-owned business that is run in the United States of America. So that's definitely great. So let's get into your product a little bit. You produce something called Reptilinks. And you basically say Reptilinks are developed specifically for lizards, snakes, amphibians, turtles, and crocodilians. The links consist of complete raw whole prey diet, offering a healthy, no-mess experience to feeding. So basically, what is Reptilinks? I know is it what its name sounds? Links for reptiles? Almost like hot dogs for reptiles?
Mm-hmm.
Or?
Mm-hmm. Hot dogs can be misleading. It tends to cause a little fuss with people. We do make sausages. They are whole prey sausages, which means we literally break down whole animals that we contract out farmers. We privately raise these animals. We develop their diets. We're very strict about the animals that we use that go into our products. And, we essentially break larger organisms down that couldn't normally be prey types for a lot of the commonly kept species of reptiles in the pet trade. And then we package them into clear collagen casings or with the minis and micros. We'll get into that in a minute. Those go through a dip system. But we essentially take larger, more nutritious animals and break them down into a sample size that is of value to pretty much a lot of the species that are kept in the reptile communities now. I can go ahead and review really quickly the main product categories that we have. The first one is the micro and mini links, and essentially those are a homogenized sample of a whole prey animal. We offer about 6 different prey types right now. Actually, it's about to be 7, which I think is almost unparalleled in this business. But the micro and mini links, the micros are about a half gram to a gram, and then the minis are roughly 2 to 3 grams. Essentially, when you order those products from us, that is a homogenized mixed sample of a whole prey that is in a little portion size for literally the smallest species of reptiles or amphibians that you could find on the planet. So that's our first category. We didn't start out right away with those, but they are one of our top sellers for obvious reasons. People need to feed and establish their neonate and, their offspring. And so that's what those are kind of aimed for, or some of the insular boas and a lot of the smaller species. And then we have, as I mentioned, the traditionally case links. We do whole chicken, rabbit, quail, pheasant, guinea fowl, which is essentially African chicken. They're a pretty cool bird. I can talk a little bit more on those as well. We also do use frog. Now, that is, we do not use whole frog. We use bone-in legs. So that with that product, that would be the exception, the only exception that isn't whole. We also do ground prey, which is included in our Tegu hatchling bundle. And we also do ground prey upon special request. If you go to our website, you won't just find ground prey other than what's in the Tegu hatchling bundle, which is just what the name implies. It is for hatchling Tegus, and it's half ground to, where they're small and they can't eat a traditionally sized link. So you raise them up on the ground until they're big enough to eat our first traditionally cased link, which is the 8 to 12 gram size. But we can do ground prey by special request. And then we also do animal whole prey, which is essentially we order everything that rodent providers would have for sale as well. So we do whole quail, we do chicken chicks, we also do quail eggs, we do button quail and cortunics, which is kind of cool. The button quail eggs are literally like a gram to like 3 grams. They're about one quarter of the size of a quaternics quail egg. So those are kind of neat. A lot of people like those as a very healthy snack for a lot of their smaller omnivorous lizards and things like that. We do offer white mice. We offer African soft fur, and we also do the Norway hooded rats, which is your typical domesticated rats that are available in the pet trade. So those are the main categories of what we do, and just kind of the general categories.
Okay, makes tons of sense. So obviously people want to know why should they pay the extra buck for your product instead of going traditionally. So for your 100 gram link, you say that it's equivalent by weight to a medium rat. So how are you able to back that up? So basically, why should people choose your product over the traditional feeding options?
They're not necessarily going the extra buck. That really depends on how you look at it. Depends on where they're acquiring their rodents. Definitely if you're acquiring your rodents from a pet store or at something that's, more than wholesale prices, then right off the bat, we're going to be very competitive there. Of course, a lot of the people that we deal with are not buying rats from pet stores. Some are, but, a lot of them have pretty good feeds on decently priced rodents. It's a wonderful question. It all comes down to the physical nature of the product. When we make product and we take the animals, it goes through at least a triple grind process. So what you end up with at the end is very dense ground meat compared to an animal that has a bunch of feathers and a lot of feces in it. If you look, example, at your traditional rodents, if you were to remove the intestinal tract or the feces from these animals, and, of course, they're all generally fed a commercial rodent diet, about one-third of the gram weight right off the bat of that animal is going to be feces. So we generally try to keep the intestinal tract and all that in our prey. So the only thing that we generally remove a lot of feces from would be from rabbits. And those, being omnivores, they tend to have a lot of fecal matter in them. So we do remove a lot of the fecal matter from the rabbit, which is one of our biggest sellers. So that's going to, right off the bat, get you a lot more of the good nutrient-dense connective tissue, bone matter, meat matter, and you have a lot of what you need and only a trace amount of what you don't as far as nutrition goes. So getting back to the kind of the physical makeup of the product, when you grind that whole prey type, it breaks it down into a very dense matter that is then stuffed into a very tightly knit package. I don't know how else to describe it. If anybody knows anything about making sausage, you can pack a ton of matter into a collagen casing. So that's exactly what we do. The links are completely filled. So if you were, and let me see if I can make this a little more clear. If you take that rat that you described, and I think the equivalent was what, a medium rat, you said, to 100 grams?
Yeah, 400 grams.
Yeah, and you know, those are just arbitrary numbers too. I mean, they're average numbers of what people would consider a large rat to be or whatever. If you take that animal and grind it up, or if you were to, at your house, you know, get a little medieval and put that thing in a blender, you're going to realize very quickly that it stinks like crazy because it's full of crap. Secondly, there's going to be like barely anything left. Okay, it's the same if I were to take a whole large rat and put it through a triple grind and then stuff it into a link. It's going to be tiny, okay? It's going to be tiny compared to that rat because you've literally homogenized that. You've broken down, kind of gone into the first stage of digestion for a lot of animals. And so essentially what you're buying would be two rats, say, for instance, give or take, that are stuffed into these casings. So if you look from a nutrient standpoint, you're looking at a product that is much higher in calorie intake, in nutrition, per gram weight. So you could see how you can't necessarily just compare the product to a large rat or 100 gram. It doesn't quite work that way. There's so many different applications involved. Getting into what I mentioned about digestion, a typical, you know, exothermic animal is they have to put a lot of effort into digesting whole prey. It just so happens that most reptiles on the planet are not evolved to feed on animals all the time that are encapsulated in hair. So that is another huge benefit. Okay. The hair is broken down and homogenized into the product, and a lot of the bone matter and things like that are ground up smaller. So the cost benefit or the nutrient level to energy conversion happens more quickly and with less effort. Essentially, the beginning stages, which are most taxing on reptiles, the beginning stages of digestion are essentially already done for the animal, which holds a lot of benefit, it turns out. I've been making this product or working on prototypes for about 10 years, and I didn't make this available to the public until 2.5 years ago. A lot of people don't know that. Another thing that we get, not so much anymore as people realize the work that I've put into this, is that we don't do whole prey and we're liars. Yeah, come work here for a day, and I will give you a pile of rabbits and we'll see how you do with them. It's complete BS. You know, you're talking about, and I used to kind of think, where do people come up with this? But now I'm realizing that they want to argue for the because they can, I guess. I don't know. I think it's also attributed to a lot of the success we've had. Change does not come well in the reptile communities, and that's something that we wanted to change and think outside of the box.
Of course.
But in a nutshell, yeah, you're paying for portioning. Okay, no one offers a 1 gram rabbit. Okay, no one offers a 1 gram quail, you know what I'm saying, 2 to 3 gram in the minis. No one offers a 8 to 12 gram link packed with frog or quail or rabbit or African guinea fowl or chicken when essentially there's 2, you know, if you take the example of quail, a newborn Cartoonix quail is 8 to 12 grams. Well, if you were to grind that, there would be nothing left of it. You could literally fit 2 or 3 of them into an 8 to 12 gram link the way we make product. Okay, so I don't know how else I can describe that, but I'll tell you what, when people use the product, they darn right know we're not messing around.
Of course.
Understandable. So everybody in this world likes to think that everything is perfect, of course, but in reality it isn't. So if you can, I know I'm kind of putting you on the spot here, but if you can think about something that makes that your products fall short in, and where you would maybe recommend feeding traditionally, what might that be?
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, my product's perfect. I wouldn't change it in any way. Ah, no, just kidding. No, nothing is perfect. We are a company that literally takes input, good or bad, and we embrace it. We want every kind of criticism we can possibly take on, as long as it has, you know, pertinence behind it. If someone's attacking us and they don't even know what we do, then that's kind of hard, right, to deal with. That can't be too productive. But if people have, you know, suggestions based on experience, especially after using the product, or they're, you know, they're familiar with the premise behind what we do, by all means. A drawback to our product, we do not offer the big links for the boids, like, you know, the green anacondas, the reticulated pythons, the Burmese pythons, the Afrocs, you know, the list could go on and on. Some of the BCC, the big true dog, you know, true red tail boas. That's kind of going backwards with what we've created, because we're taking a larger animal that can't be fed to some of the smaller animals because it's not appropriate portion size. We're taking that more nutrient dense, more bigger bone structure, you know, connective tissue animal, and we're making it available to smaller animals. One of the things that we're working on now is making the monster links. And those will essentially be the same thing. They'll just be an adequate size for the larger reptiles. So that would be one drawback that we are working on. Secondly, boas hit hard. Bigger snakes hit hard. Arboreal species of pythons and boas have big, long teeth. If you're not familiar with feeding our product, and every once in a while, even if you are, an animal is going to hit our product and they'll split a link open. Now, the same thing can happen with rodents, especially at the smaller sizes, or if you have a hard-hitting animal, you know, a traditional rat that maybe wasn't kept in the freezer properly or stayed there too long, whatever it may be, they can split the bellies on them and all kinds of good stuff, bleed them out. So it does happen with traditional rodents as well, but when you're feeding our products, you want the animal, especially you're feeding snakes, to grab on one end of the link. And you also need a very quick release on the tongs too if you're dealing with a hard-hitting animal. So those would be two drawbacks that we're working on. We actually did strengthen our casings at the larger sizes, which helped immensely. And I haven't had any complaints recently, which is really good. But we'll just continue to make the, you know, the structural integrity of our product even better over time.
Yeah, so going back to that so-called monster link that you said you were working on developing. So how would you go about executing that? Would you use longer collagen casings, wider, or
That's a great question. We are developing longer links now, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because I wanted to make sure we included that. Longer doesn't necessarily work for bigger. Longer works for longer, right? So if you're talking about a giant Burmese python or reticulated python, it doesn't really help to have a super long, skinny link. Now, if you flip that around and you look at a king cobra that specializes in eating other snakes that, you know, are adequate size, that may, you know, you're talking these animals can get 13 feet long. They could easily ingest a 5, 6, 7 foot animal or whatever it may be. So, yeah, we're working actually on some of our products to be geared towards the Elapidae family of snakes. So we're very excited about that. And I can jump back to that in a minute. Money. It's all about money. If you want to get a casing made that's larger than what is standard for pre-existing sausage making, then you need to pay out a lot of money to have those things be made all naturally and exactly how you want them. So that is what I'm battling right now, is getting larger, diameter casings. And essentially, when those come off the press, we're in business.
Okay.
So you actually brought up casings, my next question. So do you mind explaining what basically goes into making casings? And my question actually is, have you ever thought about making your own casings? I'll get into that in a few seconds, few minutes.
Yep, I know what you're getting at there. The casings that we use are all natural. They're a clear collagen casing, which is derived from essentially the subcutaneous layer of tissue between the hair and the epidermis of cattle, and they're put through a couple stages where they literally strip that material, and then they flatten it out, and it goes through a couple different processes. But essentially, you're making a tube from that matter. They don't have any preservatives. They don't have salt or anything like that. It's essentially all gelatin, organic matter that the collagen casings are made out of. When you talk about making your own casings, you essentially wouldn't be making them. You would be removing them from existing animals. So you'd be using certain intestinal tract from a pig or a goat or cattle or deer or whatever it may be. Now, to keep those things intact, you would have to pack them in some kind of preservative. That's kind of challenging. I've seen people make links with natural casings, and if you get the right ones, it can be doable, but they tend to split very easily. And, of course, they have to be packed in salt, sodium or something along those lines, which needs to be rinsed very thoroughly. So those don't just seem to align with what we're doing. We're very picky about the casings that we use.
Okay. So I want to talk a little bit about your scents, which are kind of fairly new to your shop. I know that your scents help with transitioning over from the traditional way, so the live or frozen thawed, whatever, way of feeding into the lake. So mind explaining how you came up with it, and as long as you're not exposing any secrets, how you do produce the scents.
Well, yeah, there's really no secrets with what we do. That's the thing. It's hard work. Period. You have to have a little bit of element of craziness to do what we do here, because it is backbreaking work, period. The scents we're very excited about, we refer to them as juices. It's our new juice line. Like we started with frog juice. We couldn't call it scent. We had to call it something cool like juice, whatever. It's one of those cute things or people get a kick out of. But we started with frog, and essentially I made that from the existing frog products that we came up with. And the reason I made that is because I was sick of hearing about people saying they had hog nose that were picky feeders. There is no such thing as a picky feeding reptile, okay? I want to make that clear. There is such a thing as a reptile that's kept under the wrong conditions, not the right temperatures, humidity, environment, general environment, whatever it may be. And there is very much a thing, a reptile kept that is being offered a prey type that is not evolved to consume. That happens to be the case with Western and Eastern hognose. You see a lot more Westerns because they're a little bit more of a generalist species, and they can take to rodents and a few other things. But Westerns are, you know, they've evolved to feed on toads or other amphibians and small lizards. And so naturally, these animals, some will take to rodents and others simply will not, and they will die. So the hogmills were a huge kind of powder keg for me to get the scents going. I started with the frog juice, and we have saved literally hundreds, if not thousands, of baby hognose or hognose that just go into a fast and they turn off and they don't want to eat rodents anymore. They will smack a frog link or they will hit a rodent or a link with frog scent on it. Since those are so productive and people did so well with them, I wanted to extend that same paradigm and start tackling a lot of the other species. Now, keep in mind, that's just one mainstream species that a frog scent's going to work well on. I mean, you have your garter snakes. There's so many amphibian specialists that eat, it may be toads or aquatic frogs, you name it. So I want to make clear that because a scent is just frog, it doesn't mean it's not going to work for a lot of other species as well. It could work for lizard specialists. It could work for snake specialists. So what I did was we just launched three more scents. We actually have gecko, and we have anole, and we also have a fish scent. And then, of course, what happens when you offer a bunch more of this stuff up, what do people do? Oh, they say, where's the chicken scent and where's this and that? So we have a chicken scent coming as well, which if anybody's kept reptiles for any extended period of time, they know there's a lot of species that are very partial to any fowl scent. So it could be quail, chicken, you name it. You can elicit a feeding response with that.
Okay. So I told you I was going to come back to the question I had originally, in regards to making your own casings. So instead of having a separate juice or scent, whatever, you call it juice, why not implement your juice with your casing? So it would save money for the purchaser instead of having to buy the casing and then the juice. So is there a reason why they're not together, or is it just because you're not making
most
your...
Most definitely. Or, that'd be a lot of work on our end. And I'm not sure I could stabilize that scent. Another thing is, you know, if people don't want a feed link or the application doesn't make sense for that particular animal, by all means, feed it rodents. Why fix it if it's not broken, right? So we want to offer scents because you can scent anything. You can scent a piece of chicken if you want, like a, you know, bought from the store if that's what you want to feed whatever species it may be. You can scent a pinky mouse. You can scent an adult rat. You can, you know what I mean? So by having this stuff, you basically have like nature, the power of nature at your fingertips, literally. It's up to you what you want to do with it. You can mix and match scents. I was actually thinking about mixing all of the scents, and actually I'm going to do that as well to see what kind of feeding responses I get from a lot of different species. If the, you know, it's this one strong smelling scent from all these different prey types. So the reason we don't do that right now is because, like I said, it's a lot of extra time on our part. I don't know exactly how we would implement that. And people want the freedom to, you know, be able to scent the prey type that they are choosing to feed to their animal.
Okay. Makes total sense to me now that you put it in perspective. So you also have casings or links filled with vegetables and fruits too, as well as meat. So meat and veggie, links. Sorry. So what would that be implemented for? Tegus, or what would you?
Oh yeah, you hit the nail on the head right there. Tegus all the way. Omnivorous lizards. You know, the blue-tongued skinks, bearded dragons are some of the. Those are the three staple, you know, mainstream animals generally that people use the fruit and veggie blends for. When I started this company and we launched our website, I actually tackled the tegu people first because I finished my prototypes with the fruits and veggies, and I fed my tegus this stuff for years, I was blown away at how healthy my animals were and how easy it was. I could not keep Tagus without this product. Now, some people, they're great. I mean, they go to Asian markets. They mix up the diet. They love to pre-freeze their food in little pouches and all that good stuff. That's great. Some of us that have jobs and you know, kids, and when everything adds up, although you could start preparing all your own food, but if you get into numbers of animals and all the stresses of life and everything kind of come in, that's where we want to step in and give people a very convenient, the most nutritious capsule of food that you could possibly feed these animals, you know, right there in a package at your freezer. So, yeah, we do fruits and veggie blends. We include several different types of berries. All the reptile-friendly greens, the collard greens are very good. Of course, dandelion greens are pretty much well known that they're the healthiest green for humans, you know, and reptiles alike. So we have also green beans in there. So yeah, we do a pretty good mixture of fruits and veggies, and Tagus absolutely flourish on them. We butted heads with some people on feeding bearded dragons protein matter mixed with, we do a 50-50 blend with the, which is greens and very lean rabbit finely ground. I haven't had a single problem with a beardy, and they do very well on them. So yeah, those are for the omnivorous lizards, and we could, you know, if you go on our websites or talk to people, I mean, there's people that just love the product and they couldn't do without it anymore. So it's pretty, we're very excited about that.
Yeah, most definitely. So you said that you were developing more new products. So do you mind spilling the tea a little bit of what you're working on besides the, of course, the Monster Link? What you're basically working on for the near future?
Yeah, we're always developing new products because when we started this company, we realized, you know, that's kind of what our mission statement is. We won't rest until we've really kind of changed how people feed reptiles and open up what logically makes the most sense to make these animals flourish in captivity and take, you know, a lot of these species that are on the fence of becoming mainstream into the communities where you can start to find a lot of these insular boas and, you know, a lot of these different animals that you can't necessarily find an adequate and regular feed source for them. So that's kind of what we're doing there. We just finished the fence. So we have four of those, and we offer them in a four-pack discounted bundle, which is very cool too. You know, some of the biggest name guys immediately ordered when we launched those things. I'm very excited to get those out to them. My latest and our latest project is that we're going to be making links that are geared towards the elapids. So a lot of the larger cobras are what I'm targeting. So we're literally going to be making long links, and they're going to be made out of prey sources to replicate other snakes. Anybody that keeps cobras or a lot of the snake-eating snakes know it's very hard to get these things switched over. They need a lean diet. They need, you know, they need to be eating other snakes. That means you're limited to ball python surplus or corn snakes. Corn snakes don't get really big. So what we're going to do is we have iguana, and we will be replicating, you know, reptile meat. Well, I mean, not replicating it, but essentially getting as close as you can to a lot of the other reptiles that are going to be consumed by these animals and putting it, you know, say, in a four-foot link or whatever it may be. So you could picture that, you know, taking like a four-foot sausage, literally packed with super lean, high-protein meat that is very similar to snake meat or whatever, and they just, you know, gobble that thing right down. So then again, the scent may be a factor. It may not. I know a lot of cobra people do well with frogs and things like that. So that would be a product that you could use our scent in conjunction with that as well. It's interesting that you brought that up. Actually scenting the links themselves when we package them, that would be a prime example of a product that we could potentially do that with. So we would literally package these large links coiled up, right? Vacuum sealed,
yep.
You would thaw them and then straighten them out and feed them to your, you know, 10-foot king cobra or whatever. But yep. We could also package that in the scents that we make. Thanks for giving me that idea. I think I'm going to do it.
No problem. Well, our time has almost expired, so I thank you so much, Nick, for coming on and explaining your product. And definitely when you come up with new products, I will be getting in contact with you so you can come on the show and explain them in greater detail for us.
Oh, yeah. I definitely appreciate it, Bud, and appreciate the opportunity. I could talk to you guys for hours about this. Yeah, it's been cool. Did you want our info or?
Oh yeah, I totally forgot. Thank you so much. I normally get that. So where can people find you?
Yeah, I'll be working. That's but no that was a bad joke. you can find us at www.reptilinks. That's reptilinks.com. We got a really nice website. We're always adding things to that. There is product reviews. There's breeders that sell link fed animals, all that good stuff. That's the best place to order. We do all orders through the website. Email, I literally answer these things as they come in, along with a few other people that work for us. We want to strive to reinvent customer service. So email is info@reptilinks.com. I'm always on Facebook when I'm not working or when I am. We have a wonderful safe group called The Linkside. That's The Linkside, two words, LINKSIDE. And those are all people that use links, want to learn about the links. I think we're right around 2,000 people on there. So we're starting to get up there in numbers a little bit. Great place to get customer interaction. If you're skeptical or curious or you don't know what to order and you need to be size matched, that's where I get everybody to go. We also have a business page on Facebook, which is reptilinks.com Facebook. It's a little bit trickier to keep in touch with people on there because a lot of the comments can get hidden and things like that, but I try to do my best. The Linkside is a closed group, so, you know, you just send in a request. I'll get you set up over there. I also, you know, get hundreds of PMs in a day, and I literally tackle them as they come in the best I can. So PM on Facebook is a great way to get a hold of us as well.
Great. Well, all that information that he said will be available in the show description below, as well as some amazing pictures that they have taken of animals and their links. Those are all in your player, as well as our sponsors for tonight's show, which is KingDubia.com. They are also tackling the wonderful world of feeders, but they're going into different aspects. They're using dubia roaches, so they're reinventing feeding dubia roaches. So thank you so much, Nick.
Excellent.
Once again, we look forward to talking to you real soon.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I thank you guys so much for tuning in to another episode of Empire State Reptiles Live. More information will be available as to when our next show will be, hopefully next week. But you never know, maybe sooner, maybe later than that. But you can follow us on Instagram at ESR Live. That is simply the words ESRLIVE. ESR Live, or you can find us online. Our little voiceover guy will tell you more information on how you can find us online in just a second. But if you want to stay in the loop 24/7 with Empire State Reptiles Live, don't forget to text at Show Remy to 81010. That is, text this message at, literally the symbol at, SHOWREMI. 81010. I thank you guys once again from the bottom of my heart for tuning in for another episode of this beautiful show, and I hope to see you guys very, very soon. Good night.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Empire State Reptiles Live. Find us online at EmpireStateReptilesLive.com.